नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Canto 3, Chapter 25, Glories of Devotional Service, and text is 42.
Madhyadvativathoyam
Suryas Tapati Madhyas Parshatindra dahat yagnir Mrityus charati madbhayat Madbhayat vati vatoyam Suryas tapati madbhayat Parshatindra dahat yagnir Mrityus charati madbhayat madbhayat out of fear of me vati blows vatah wind ayam this surayah the sun tapati shines matbhayat out of fear of me varshati showers rain indrah indra dahati burns agni fire mrityuh death charati goes matbhayat out of fear of me. Translation: it is because of my supremacy that the wind blows. This is Lord Kapila Dev speaking to Devahuti, his mother. It is because of my supremacy that the wind blows out of fear of me. The sun shines out of fear of me, and the Lord of the clouds, Indra, sends forth showers out of fear of me, fire burns out of fear of me, and death goes about taking its toll out of fear of me. Doesn't sound like a very friendly atmosphere. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that the natural laws being enacted are correct in all activities because of his superintendence. No one should think that nature is working automatically without superintendence. The Vedic literature says that the clouds are controlled by the demigod Indra. Heat is distributed by the sun god. The soothing moonshine is distributed by Chandra, and the air is blowing under the arrangement of the demigod Vayu. But above all these demigods, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is the chief living entity. Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam. The demigods are ordinary living entities, but due to their faithlessness, their devotional attitude, faithfulness. I'll do it again. The demigods are also ordinary living entities, but due to their faithfulness, their devotional service attitude, they have been promoted to such posts. These different demigods or directors, such as Chandra, Varuna, and Vayu, are called Adhikari Devata. Adhikari is a term that means qualification, one who has corresponding characteristics of, that's one's adhikar. So, adhikari devata. The demigods are departmental heads. The government of the Supreme Lord consists not only of one planet, or two, or three. There are millions of planets and millions of universes. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has a huge government, and he requires assistance. The demigods are considered his bodily limbs. That's in the universal form. Demigods have that status. Bodily limbs. These are the descriptions of the Vedic literature. Under these circumstances, the sun god, the moon god, the fire god, and the air god are working under the direction of the Supreme Lord. It is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Maya adhyakshena prakriti suyate sacharacharam. The natural laws are being conducted under his superintendence. Because he is in the background, everything is being performed punctually and regularly. And second paragraph, one who has taken shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is completely protected from all other influences. He no longer serves or is obliged to anyone else. Of course, he is not disobedient to anyone, but his full power of thought is absorbed in the service of the Lord. The statements by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Kapila, that under his direction the air is blowing, the fire is burning, and the sun is giving heat, are not sentimental. The impersonalist may say that the Bhagavatam devotees create and imagine something, someone, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and assign qualifications to him, but actually it is neither imagination nor an imposition of artificial power in the name of Godhead. In the Vedas, it is said, Vishashmat Vata Pavate Bisho Deiti Surayaha. Translation, by fear of the Supreme Lord, the wind god and the sun god are acting. And again, Bisheshmad Agnis Chandrascha Mrityur Dhavati Panchamaha. Translation, Agni, Indra, and Mrityu are also acting under his direction. These are the statements of the Vedas. The verse again, Mad Bhayat Vati Vatoyam Suryas Tapati Mad Bhayat Varshatindro Dahat Yagnir Mrityus Charati Mad Bhayat. Translation, it is because of my supremacy that the wind blows out of fear of me. The sun shines out of fear of me. And the Lord of the clouds, Indra, sends forth showers out of fear of me. He was really afraid this morning. Really intense. Fire burns out of fear of me, and death goes about taking its toll out of fear of me. There were several things. Just to soften the language a bit, going back several verses, Kapila Dev, this is text 42, so the chapter is well developed. Going back earlier in the chapter, Kapila Dev is describing the process of devotion, and then towards the end he describes the culmination of that process. of devotion. And it's not at all anything to do with fear. It's very thick affection exchange between the devotee and the Lord. I'm going to read a few verses because they're so nice. Text 38. My dear mother, devotees who receive such transcendental opulences, the transcendental opulences, it's not like money or position or things like that. It's the opulences of affection and the qualities that enable them to do service nicely, pleasing the Lord and so forth. Devotees who receive such transcendental opulences are never bereft of them. Neither weapons nor the change of time can destroy such opulences, because the devotees accept me as their friend, their relative, their son, preceptor, benefactor, and supreme deity. They cannot be deprived of their possessions at any time. Thus, the devotees who worship me, the all-pervading Lord of the universe, in unflinching devotional service, gives up all aspirations to be promoted to the heavenly planets or becoming happy in this world with wealth, children, cattle, home, or anything in relationship with the body. I take him to the other side of birth and death. Then fear starts coming in. The terrible fear of death and rebirth can never be forsaken by anyone who resorts to any shelter other than myself. For I am the Almighty Lord, the Supreme Personality, God, the original source of all creation, and also the Supreme Soul of all souls. So what's being described here is for those that aren't their devotees, the demigods or devotees, controlling personalities in the universe, they're mixed devotees. They have devotion, and so they're promoted to like a responsible kind of service. But they're mixed. They have other aspirations. They have other shelters. They have other than pure love in their hearts. And so their position of service has this component of fear. There's two references in addition to this verse in the Bhagavatam from the Upanishads, meaning standard in response to those who say, "Oh, humbug, you know, this is mythology and what are you talking about?" It's in the Vedas, the same notion that the material elements and those presiding personalities of the material elements, they're under the supervision of the Supreme. And they understand they're obliged to act responsibly. There's some other references. They're not the same as these mentioned in this Bhagavatam purport. In Bhagavad Gita, in the 9th chapter, text number 6, Prabhupada quotes different places in the Upanishads. Yad bisha vata pavate, from the Upanishads. Very short statement. It is out of fear of the Supreme Lord that the wind is blowing. It's the Taittiriya Upanishad, and the Taittiriya Upanishad amongst the Upanishads is up there. It's considered qualitatively like in a superlative position. And then another Upanishad, Brihat Aranyaka Upanishad. I'm just reading directly from 9.6 Bhagavad Gita purport. It is stated, long Sanskrit text, by the Supreme Order, under the superintendence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the moon, the sun, and the other great planets are moving. And then Prabhupada quotes the Brahma Samhita, Yach Chakshur Esha Savita Sakala Grahanam, Raja Samastra Suramurti Ashesha Teja, Yas Yagya Ya Brahmati Samrita Kala Chakro. This is a description of the sun's movement. So these are the elements of creation and the superintendence of those elements of creation. And the main thing to take from this is not like the fear element, but that there's superintendence. Those that aren't, say again in a concise manner. Bhakti Vinod Thakur says that performing devotional service out of duty and performing devotional service out of love, they're not on the same platform. So duty is I have to, and love is I want to. And the demigods are in that I have to. They want to, but they also have to. The love is mixed with a controlling feature, and with that controlling feature comes, because they're not the controllers, they're subordinate servants, and the Lord is controlling, but they have this like Ishwara Bhav, this thing that says, I'm the controller. So that creates a fear because they're not. And, you know, they have a superior that they're responsible to, and they can get, you know, bumped. They can lose their post. Like Indra becomes fearful, oh, I might lose my post. And so he does foolish things sometimes. But that's due to this attachment to the material conception of being a doer as opposed to the spiritual conception of simply being the servant. And the simply being the servant out of love is like what Kapila Deva is speaking to Devahuti in the previous verses. And here is like for those that aren't situated in love, they have to serve anyway. And then there are those that are just rebellious spirited, and you know they have to serve anyway too. They serve in prison, called the material creation that the superintendents of the creation are looking after. So that's like I just spent that much time on this fear notion. It's not what the more evolved or more advanced or more mature stage of devotional services. But there is a position of motivating people out of fear. I remember it no longer exists, but from where Brooklyn Temple is the route to go to Manhattan was we go through the LB Square, like, you know, behind the temple and around and around. And almost every day there was some Bible-thumping guy with a microphone and an amplification system. You're going to burn. You're going to hell if you don't, you know, get good and surrender to, you know, the whole program. So, you know, I couldn't believe it. People would go and stand around the guy and hear them, you know, you're going to go to hell, you're going to burn, and you better, you know, sit up straight, or you're going to get it, man. And like, motivation out of fear is not, you know, maybe out of the mode of ignorance, that's one way to motivate people who are in ignorance. If you don't, you're going to get smacked. And that's not very appealing to people that aren't in the mode of ignorance. But for people that are in the mode of ignorance, like, that's going to get them to sit up straight, at least for a little while. The message of Bhagavatam is not that one, not motivation out of fear. It's Krishna. It's a motivation by Krishna as the all-attractive. Like a magnet in iron filings. Just move that magnet near the iron filings and they're attracted to the magnet. Because it's just, that's how nature works. And spiritual nature works by the all-attractive attracts. So there are those that are, I don't know, rusty iron or something, and they need a little, like, you better get attracted to that magnet message. The main, otherwise the main message, both in the Bhagavad Gita, where that reference is being made, and more specifically here, in this Bhagavatam verse, is there's a superintendent. It's called a teleological argument. It's a nice word. Teleology means there's order in the universe. And because there's order in the universe, by inference, there's something that's bringing about that order. It's a teleological argument. In St. Thomas Aquinas, I think it was him, gave like 10 proofs of God. They're not proofs, they're just like logical extensions. This plus this equals that. It's a, by inference, it's anuman. We know that there are these three evidences. In Sanskrit word is pramana. And the like nice, big, fancy English word is epistemology. Ooh, what's that? It's the means of knowing something. So, same, universal. Sense perception, I see it, therefore I can understand it. But our senses are imperfect. I have figured it out. By inference, I can understand. Like I just was hearing this morning, Prabhupada was explaining mangoes. Those that live where there's mango trees. Mango season starts in February and it goes through June. So I've lived so many years and it's January now and I'm in India and I know by inference mangoes are going to come. It's by inference. Like, you know, it may not happen. Who knows? It's not like for certain things. It may not happen. But by inference I can know that, or something. You know, you hear a knock on the door. You hear a sound at the door. So somebody's at the door. You don't see anybody at the door, but could you answer the door? Somebody's at the door. So by inference, it might be something else, but by inference. So reasoning is imperfect, but that's one of the ways of knowing things. They have these classical ones from Vedic texts to show what these means of proof are. And the third is Shabda Praman or Shruti Praman, by sound vibration, by descending knowledge from a perfect source, then we can know something. So the Thomas Aquinas 10 proofs of God, one of them is this teleological argument. It's a standard one. There's order in the universe. Why is there order in the universe? The intelligent design scientists use this. They say, they give the example of Mount Rushmore. You know what Mount Rushmore is? What's Mount Rushmore?
It's where there's Abraham Lincoln and Thomas Jefferson, George Washington.
Okay, that's good. That's good. So you go to Mount Rushmore and you look at the thing and say, here's three choices. It's just an accident. It's just like a random series of events and it just somehow happened. Chance. That's one possibility. Then another possibility is it had to be that way. It's like the laws of nature say it had to be that way. Then a third possibility is somebody created it, like someone designed the thing. Well, here's another example from archaeology. You live in North Carolina. You're an archaeologist and you're searching for artifacts and you find a bunch of what looks like arrowheads, stones that are shaped in a certain shape, and there's a wedge, and there's like sharp edges on this side and that side, and there's certain like marks that show that look like at least that there was some instrument that was used to make those sharp edges on both sides. So then you could, and then you find like 50 of them within like, you know, a 100-foot radius. 50 of them. It's just chance. Or the laws of nature are such that it came out that way. It's just forced by the laws of nature. They have this term, the mindless, directionless laws of nature. It just had to come out that way. Or there's so many of them in this area, and they all are of the same size, and they all have the same shape, and someone designed it. So, like that, they say, inference by the most likely explanation. It's not proof. None of those are proofs, but it's an inference. It's anuman, by reasoning. Because you can't go back in time and discover who put those pieces of stone there. Or go back in time and look at Mount Rushmore before and after. But just by looking at the thing, by inference. With the inference by the most likely explanation. So the intelligent design folks say that the information that's in DNA just happened to be like that. Or it had to be like that because the laws of nature are such it had to be like that. You just can't get it any other way. It had to be like that. Or there's some design. And the amount of information, they say, the amount of information that's in DNA is superlative to the most sophisticated computer program you can find. And they quote, what's his name from Microsoft?
Jobs.
Yeah, no, that's Apple.
Bill Gates.
Yeah, Bill Gates. Bill Gates says, the amount of information within the strand of DNA is I couldn't hire hundreds of thousands of people over hundreds of thousands of years to create that much information. So their inference is, if computer programming is done by chance, or it had to be that way, or by intelligent programmers. The inference is the last one. And similarly, look at the information that's in DNA. So if you say everything is coded in the DNA, and that's why the way it is, like, trees look this way instead of that way, or whatever, the details of... So inference by the most plausible explanation. So one of these inferences of the existence of God is the teleological argument. You look at, that's what Prabhupada is giving in the purport, he just isn't giving it a label, but you look at the orderliness of the universe. The sun rises at a certain time, every day. And the seasons turn very predictably. The weather patterns are somewhat different, but the basic, because of the movements of the sun, there are seasons. It's predictable. And the different seasons according to where you are on the planet of the earth, it's predictable. In certain patterns, at least. With variations. And so on. So, why does the sun move? So, it just had to be that way. Or it's just chance. Or there's some design. So, the Vedas are saying it's that there's a... This is... So, the inference is one. But then, stronger is Shruti Praman. Or Shabda Praman. The Vedas say. So, he's giving the teleological argument, and then he's giving the scriptural argument. The scriptural argument is from the Upanishads that says this is why it happens. In the conversation between Kapila Dev and his mother Devahuti, he's doing several things. One is he's making it very clear, because he's her son. And, how can mothers look at their son as the personality of God unless they're like, have a good imagination? But he wants her to know, because she's been explaining so many things, it's not just, you know, God, but I've appeared by your austerities and Kapila Dev's, or Kardama Muni's austerities, by the will of Lord Vishnu, I've come, and I'm Lord Vishnu, as your son. And here's some idea of what I mean by that. This is the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that all the elements of creation are working under his direction. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, Mayad Yakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam. The moving and the non-moving beings. The non-moving beings are the plants and trees and those kinds of things. And the moving beings, the fish and birds and humans and animals. And the elements that comprise their forms and the cosmos in which they exist, it's all under my direction. So that's one way of saying it. Another way of saying it is the wind blows under my direction. And Vayum has the wind blow under my direction. So the authority, the power, is coming from the powerful. And there are persons who administrate the power. So it's helping us to get a clear picture of the administrative agents in the creation of God and where they're deriving their power from the Supreme. The two other things. One is, in the 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna firmly declares that if you can understand where everything comes from, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matak Sarvam Pravartate, the inference of that, or the consequence of that, is you engage in devotional service to them. You there's the superior, we're the subordinate. What do? You serve them. It's just natural, at least for an honest person. For a dishonest person or an envious person, it's like you compete, or you like say something bad about them. try to you know, bring them down. But an honest person, person of integrity, it's just natural. You're in the presence of a great person, you want to do something. Just natural. Just natural. So he's saying that to his mother. That's the position of the Supreme Lord. And you, when you recognize everything comes from the Supreme Lord, everything that's moving is moving from the direction of the Supreme Lord, you want to serve that person. And the final point is, the verse in Bhagavad Gita where the same message is being presented, out of fear of the Lord, the wind blows, and that kind of thing. It's in relation to the example that Krishna gives to help Arjuna understand his position. In the 9th chapter, the most confidential knowledge, Krishna says, I am going to describe to you something that is the most confidential. Raja Vidya Raja Guyam Pavitram Idam Uttamam Pratyaksha Avagamam Dharmyam Susukam Kartam Avyayam. Very special. Most confidential. And then he says, okay, here it is. And what it is the very difficult to understand, kind of like mystical relationship between all that exists and the source of all that exists. And Krishna speaks of that relationship between all that exists and the source of all that exists in this, I call it Upanishadic double talk. I'm within everything and outside of everything. Behold my mystic, I'll read the verses. precedes it by saying those that are faithful can understand and those that are not return to the path of birth and death. So text number 4, it's just 3 verses. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. All beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet, everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, and although I am everywhere, I am not part of the cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. So, you know, can you make your head spin? What's he saying? So he makes it easy. Let me make it easy for you, Arjuna. Here's a nice example. There's the, think of the big, vast sky. And the wind is blowing in the big, vast sky. That's easy to get your mind around. Similarly, understand that all beings rest in me. So, here's the big, vast sky, and the wind is blowing. Does the big, vast sky get moved when the wind is blowing? No. It's more subtle. And so, the wind can stand still, the wind can move, the wind can be a big hurricane. The sky isn't moved at all. But yet, within that big, vast sky, the air is moving. So, Krishna, two things. Krishna is that, like the big, vast sky, he encompasses everything. Everything is within me. But he's not moved when that the creation moves, or comes into being, stays for some time, goes out of being, goes into an unmanifest state. He's unchanged. And yet, the second part is, the creation comes from him. It doesn't exist except from him, but he's separate from it. As like the big vast sky and the wind is blowing. So from our this same section of the Bhagavatam, Sankhya teaching, the grosser elements unfold from the subtler elements. You understand that one, right? What's the first, in the Sankhya section of the Bhagavatam, what's the first element that manifests? There's like this, the glance of Mahavishnu over Pradhan. What's Pradhan? Pradhan is the undifferentiated sum total of material ingredients. It's like undifferentiated is that they're not separated out into their different elements. It's just like the total, you know, glob, whatever. It's subtle, primordial material elements, undifferentiated. And it's that Pradhan that Mahavishnu glances over. And when he glances, with his glance goes the living entities and time. And when the living entities and time, because the living entities have this modes of nature connected to them, but dormant, and their previous karma, but dormant, and their animating factor of the life, the soul, and time. So all that contacts Pradhan. And what happens next? It's sequential. There are things, events that unfold from that. From that, the elements start to differentiate. And the first element that appears is our dear friend. False ego. Ta-da! And then false ego mixing with the mode of goodness manifests our next dear friend, the mind. And false ego mixing with passion, mode of passion, manifests material intelligence. Because you have to have material intelligence to get what you want. So there it is, material intelligence. And the false ego mixing with the mode of ignorance manifests the five gross elements. And the five gross elements further then manifest the sense objects and the senses and the working senses and knowledge acquiring senses. So you got this whole, you got a warehouse filled with stuff that started with just this undifferentiated sum total of material ingredients. Then he goes through and further subdivides and says they don't, the five gross elements are just like boom, because there's false ego in the mode of contacting the mode of ignorance. The first of the subtle elements appears, besides mind and intelligence, the ether or sky, akash in Sanskrit. And from sky, certain other things manifest, and then through passage of time, from sky, fire, then air, then water, then earth. And that is to say, within the subtler elements, the potential of the grosser elements are contained. We'll take sky. Sky has the capacity to carry sound. And, gee, the scientists use that all the time. That's like, you know, cell technology. And all, you know, send a signal, boom, and it goes through this, goes through the Earth's atmosphere, air, and it goes beyond the Earth's atmosphere into the space. But space, or it's what carries sound, so it hits a satellite, bounces back, and, you know, hello. Because sound is carried through the element of ether. So, now we'll go back to the ninth chapter Bhagavad Gita example. There's the air blowing in space, or sky. So, when you're in the Earth's atmosphere, is there space? Sure, because the wind is just blowing in space, or sky. So now we'll go down. When you're in the water, is there space? It's because just as the air is in space, the water is in space. So like, you know, when you're over here and over there, some sound is made and it carries not through the water, but through space. You know, if someone's banging something in the water and you're some distance away, you can hear it. Or a boat is passing by and you're swimming underwater, you can hear. You know, because it's carried through, not through the water, but through space. Sound is carried through space. So, and through the earth. Because there's also space, because the earth is within space. It's space or sky or akash that carries sound. Then you go to the next element, you know, form, taste, touch, you know, by each of the elements. They enable the senses that are created by matter. And anyway, so from the gross element, from the subtle element, the grosser elements unfold one after the next. The first is sky, and then is fire. And then is air. No, it's first is the sky, then is air, then fire, then water, then earth. So whatever is in earth, excuse me, whatever is in sky is also within the lower elements. So earth has taste, it has smell, it has sound. It has the capacity for all of the elements. And in sky, it's just one, sound. Doesn't have form. Doesn't have smell. Doesn't have taste. So as the elements unfold, it works the other way around. When creation annihilation takes place, earth folds into the next subtle element, and then water folds into the next subtle element, and so forth. It's just like an accordion. That's what the process is described in Sankhya philosophy. So what does it have to do with this morning Bhagavatam class? Those elements are under the direction of the source of those elements. And they unfold, or they fold back into themselves, or they move about here and there under some direction. It's not a random, chaotic, chance event. Or even the laws of nature, which are orderly, they're under some direction. They're not just like, where'd that law come from? And where did the supervision of that law come from? There's an intelligence. There's a supreme. There's a superintending personality, ultimately, that gives authority and power to those that are looking after the creation. One who knows that, it's impetus for service. There's a more intimate, going back to the previous verses that Kapila is speaking to her, there's a more intimate position of service than, gee, I've got to serve. I'm obliged. It's duty. Like a child serving their parent because I'm obliged. I'm little, they're big. I got to serve my parents. Then there's another of love. I do because I love. Or, you know, like obeying the laws of the country and serving your country out of love, or having a relationship of marriage and I stay in that relationship of marriage because it's like, you know, I'm obliged to do it. And then there's a position of love. So I may be obliged to serve God because, like, that's what you're supposed to do. It's duty. Then there's love. And so in devotional service unfolds in a mature stage into that position of love. But in the preliminary stage, it may be because, like, I have to. Because that's what you're supposed to do. That's the right thing to do. Here's the person upon whom everything that I receive, I'm fully dependent. If they restrict, I suffocate. I can't exist. So I better sit straight, be obedient, and serve. To some degree, the inference is that the demigods are on that position, on the platform, and there's a more evolved or more mature stage of devotional service in the realm of love. But many people in this world are influenced by the capacity of science to know the cause and effect of things, and therefore create like gizmos and gadgets and electronics and very far out things. And as far as they're concerned, it's just the laws of nature. So there's these three possibilities: chance, impelled by the laws of nature, and there's an intelligence. We can say God. There's an intelligence behind the whole thing. And some people say chance. Some people say it's just largely science says it's just the laws of nature. There's only one thing. There's matter and the laws that are governing matter, and that's all there is. There isn't anything else. We can explain everything according to matter and the laws governing matter. And that's all there is. And this other talk about, you know, God, that's silly. That's for people that just like are lazy, weak-minded, and they don't take the time to like understand what the laws of nature are, and then you can make the push and pull. Once you understand the laws of nature, you don't need God in this picture. Then there are those scientists that say, Well, looking at, you know, the situation that we see here, chance, it had to be by the laws of nature, or there's some design. We say there's some design. There's some intelligence behind all this. And the Bhagavatam is saying the same. Any questions? A little science class this morning. Yes?
It takes like Adhikara Devatas, like Chandra, all the state gods. So,
this is for recording purposes, I think. Hope it works. Just keep speaking. Go ahead.
All these demigods, it's all like a post. So each Brahma, whenever the destruction goes on, and then for each Brahma day, it's being like a newly posted, or it's like a...
No, for each Manu, there's a whole new set. Just like in America, when the president gets elected, one of the first things he does, he selects his cabinet. Similarly, when there's a change of Manus, he selects a whole new set of his team. Someone else becomes Indra, someone else becomes... It's a post. And it's Manu, it's 14 Manus in each day of Brahma. It's a post, it's a fixed post that to administrate, and he selects somebody to be in that post.
So after that post is gone, so what is
the post that? Doesn't go, the person goes.
The person goes, what is that position?
What's the position? Same position.
I mean, after that, what would be their service?
Oh, where does the soul go?
Yeah.
Depends on how they did their service. How about you? You know, like when your daughter grows up, and you know, what are you going to do? Where are you going to go? You know, depending upon the qualities and so forth, and your relationship with Krishna, you'll go on to some other service. Not fixed. It depends on how you develop. Same for them. It depends on how about you? Same. And for them, same. They can go back to Godhead. They can come back. Up to the point of attaining full shelter in the personality of Godhead. Then there's this cycle of birth and death. And they're born, and they stay for some time, and they'll die, and they'll take another birth, unless they achieve. So, and where they take their birth depends upon consciousness they've developed. Yes.
Events happening in the earth today, like the earthquake, tsunami, and everything. So, do we consider it as a laws of nature or like an intelligence behind it?
What do you think?
If we think that there is a God behind everything. So,
to say that God is behind it doesn't exclude the laws of nature, because the laws of nature, under the direction of, in the second of the two options that you presented, there's a design behind whatever they call it, layers of the earth's crust, and there's a fissure and it can shift. That's design. That it's there and it can shift. That's design. And when it does or when it doesn't, that's also under some supervision. The other is, it's just primordially that way, and by laws of nature, this pressing against that, and course of time, it shifted. And you don't need God in the picture. That's those folks that say that kind of thing. Or who knows, whatever they come up with, because of global warming and, you know, the sun's movement, and that causes the shift, and you got to, you know, whatever they got it for their, this causes that, and, you know, for those people, God's not in the picture. There's no control there. Like, how did you get a planet to begin with? And the answer is, Big Bang. That's how you got a planet to begin with. And when this big fiery thing cooled down, you got these layers and, you know, you got fissures. That's how it happened. Thermodynamics, that's all. Just laws of nature. That's all there is. So to say there's a design doesn't mean there's no laws of nature. It means there's someone, there's a design, the designer behind those laws, an enforcer of those laws.
Yeah, but when someone designs something, the law of nature can be modified.
Sure. But who has that discretionary power? Okay. So we're in the second category. The answer to your question is the second category. Are you satisfied?
Yeah.
Okay. To say the second one, I'll just repeat it. It doesn't mean there's no laws of nature. It's just like whimsical acts of somebody that says, you know, let there be a tsunami. You know, some capricious will of the wisp, you know, like, you know, waving his hand and saying, let a bunch of people die. Not like that. There's laws of nature. And the laws of nature are under some supervision. Yeah?
Rumen, on this topic of fear and love, what is it that actually makes a devotee, aspiring devotee, use on that move, duty, primarily, or fear, even, go from that stage to, you know, happy love?
What do you think? As I answered his question with a question, what do you think?
I'd like to get a deeper answer to that. Like, what I heard from you is the process of purification and association of elevated souls.
Yeah, saying the same thing in different language. You're going from a diseased to a healthy state. So, in the diseased state, we're rebellious. And to go in the healing stage, we take some medicine. Why? Because we don't like to be diseased. We don't like to suffer. But what happens when the suffering stops? Hey, no more medicine. See you later, Krishna. Hari Bol. Until we meet again. And that is suffer again. Oh, better take medicine again. So that's duty. You know, sporadic. And then I may get more fixed in duty. I better really, like, continue to take this medicine because I don't want to relapse. But if, important if, one receives not just, like, medicine, but descending mercy from one who has bhakti, then one can get bhakti from one who has bhakti. And then it's not just like duty, it's bhakti. And the seed can, then a bhakti can grow until love.
Remember your comment, something that I've noticed, observed, is that sometimes that even though elevated souls are providing that association and that, you know, that bhakti. Many persons and don't see that and rather misunderstand it to be something else.
Such is life in the conditioned world.
And is there no hope for such persons unless they see that, wait a second, this is really not, you know...
Well, the mercy of qualified souls can potentially, at least the potency is there, can transform. That's uncommon. More common is sadhana. Kripa siddha, sadhana siddha, and nitya siddha. So with sadhana, there has to be some saying yes, some acceptance. Kripa siddha, your question is there some hope? So the hope is that they say yes. And part of saying yes is over an extended period of time, some agyata sukriti, unknowingly doing something. But, you know, other than that, the hope is kripa siddha. Then it's not forced, but, you know, like, just like a ton of mercy falls on somebody and... Jagai and Madhai, they didn't do any sadhana. They just got a ton of mercy. There was a yes at the end. They still could have said no. But they didn't do sadhana. Anything else? Yeah? Prabhupada's saying in the purport, yeah.
Yeah, a lot of millions of universes are there. So I was wondering just like for example, if you check this universe and there are a lot of planets. So universes in the planets and the spiritual world, like each has its own systematic designs and everything. Like, so universes in this universe, in this planet, so they might be transferred or
yes.
Going to the other universes,
yeah.
Other planets.
Yeah, sure. Why not? It's up to Krishna. He's got like lots of options. He's not restricted. Oh, once they're in that universe, I can't move them to another universe. Who's going to stop him? It's all under his direction. So he can, as he likes.
So the other set of universes have also the same set of designs or
should be something? Yeah, same basic with variations on the theme. As far as we know, I mean, you know, I've not been there, but that's far. It's there are standard components within the creation.
That's interesting to know.
Hmm?
That's interesting to know that.
Yeah. You know, far beyond our imagination is what the Vedas describe as reality. And how would we know? There's three, you know. Direct perception, inference and logic, and authority of scripture. That's how we know. That's the best means of knowing. Is she needing anything? You had one of those things on your forehead a little while ago, like a big question mark. What was it? You don't know? Okay. 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 Thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.